What secret lies trapped within these 250-million-year-old crystals of original Himalayan crystal salt? Why did ancient civilizations value this more than gold? The answer's quite simple. Trapped within these crystals is life.
Houston, we have a problem.
And welcome. Today is Thursday, the 12th of December, 2013, and you are listening to The Pseudoscientists, the official podcast of the Young Australian Skeptics. My name's Belinda Nicholson, and joining me this week is Jack Scanlon.
Hello.
Sarah McBride.
Hello, everyone.
And special guest, Elizabeth Raikkonen.
Hi.
Am I going to cut out the gaps in
yes,
between?
Yes, please
that?
do.
I thought it had a charm.
Yeah, I mean, you can. You can just, like, now just cut out the bit where you've said that you're going to cut out the thing with the cutout.
No, we can't now because we've talked about it too much. Oh, dear.
Shouldn't you can have just cut it that bit out. And this.
Retro matter.
And this.
Forever and ever. Liz, it's good to have you on the show. People would probably know you from the podcast episode where Ted interviewed you and your maths teacher.
Yeah, hopefully they don't have that short of a memory that they would have forgotten by now.
It was only a couple of months ago. Between 1 month and two.
I've lost all sense of time. That's just ridiculous.
Why is that? Because you've just finished, like...
Yeah, I've just finished school. I'm on holidays. Yeah.
Not school forever.
Oh, not... No. No, I'm still in school, unfortunately. But
you're in high school.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And the reason that we have... One of the main reasons that I wanted you on the show is that Rachel is not in high school anymore. So we don't have anybody in high school.
We need a high school representative.
We can't call ourselves Young Australian Skeptics if there isn't somebody who's actually young. I mean, we're all in our 20s, so...
We're
not young anymore. We're old, brittle people.
Yeah.
That I got my first grey hair the other day. Actually, I couldn't tell because they're all blonde. But, you know, I'm awaiting it. It wasn't even a joke. It was just the cold, hard truth. But people who are listening to the show who are older than in their 20s are very annoyed because I have a lot of friends who are not 20, who are older than 20, and they always get annoyed when I say that I'm old compared to younger people because they're... I don't know, they're just going senile. but yeah, it's good to have you on.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you've finished school for the year?
Yep, I've done it a week of year 11, which doesn't really count. But yeah, going to year 11, starting VCE, that's going to be fun.
So oh, yeah. Good times.
I think you're the youngest person we've had on the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone 16 at one point?
Oh, I actually... Well, yeah. But, actually, yeah. That... If I was
he doesn't
smarter,
count himself.
If I was smarter, that would be me leading into the fact to brag that I was 16 when I started the show. But it slipped my mind because I've always been this old in my mind. I was 16 when the show started, but that doesn't count because it was ages ago. I don't know.
Yeah,
it was a whole different show back then.
It was. It was a very different show back then. There were crickets, and do you remember the crickets?
Crickets, what do you mean?
It was a cricket episode, like a cricket stuck
into
the
room.
Oh,
yeah, that was in the bloopers. Yeah, I remember that. I edited that episode together with Jason in an airport when we were coming back from the Brisbane National Skeptics Convention in 2009. That was pretty cool. Yeah, so fun times. what's everyone been up to this week? Belinda, have anything?
So I've started learning to drive. Everyone be warned. It's taken me 23 years to get to this point, but I'm there now. I'm learning to drive in a manual.
Okay.
In a manual. Respect.
Not a dodging car.
No. Actual, like, real car with gears and everything and a clutch. So, fun times. That and also I've found out what I'm doing next year. I got offered a PhD spot at the University of Southern Queensland. So, I am moving to Toowoomba.
Does that mean you're not doing the podcast anymore?
Yeah, from next year, yes. That means that I'll be in...
We can ring you.
You can do Skype.
Skype in Toowoomba. Yeah. Do they
have the internet there? Because Toowoomba sounds like a classic Australian place,
it
like
really
Woolloomooloo
does.
Or
Whoop Whoop. It's Mullum the double O's and the O's and the...
Yeah, it's all the traditional Aboriginal sounding places that tend to be, I don't know, in the desert and stuff. Like, not really. Like, there's heaps of places in suburban Melbourne that have Aboriginal names.
Yeah.
But
it's just the image.
Sounds like it's in the desert.
It's not. It's sort of in the range, Great Dividing Range, mountainous areas inland of Brisbane. About 2 hours inland of Brisbane. So my
family lives near the Great Dividing Range. I could just walk along the mountains to you.
You could. It would might only take you a while.
A couple of months, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, probably. I mean, mountains. As it stands, it takes like 20 hours to drive there.
And mountains do stand quite high.
They do. Yes.
Sarah, what have you been up to?
Not much. Uni's over for me.
Like it was last week.
It was last week.
Have you progressed through any of the video games that you were playing?
I have progressed through a lot of the video games. I have, in fact, finished The Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds.
Wow. That wasn't released that long ago, was it?
No, but to be fair, it is one of the shorter releases in the Zelda series. I'll talk about this at length later.
In the spin-off podcast that we're still planning
maybe,
to do.
Maybe, yeah.
With Tom.
Yeah,
that
that'd
we talked
be
about
fun.
Last week.
Yeah.
You're not as enthusiastic this time.
All right. I'm very enthusiastic. And I'm finishing the other ones, so I'll let you guys know.
Yeah. Update.
What's going on?
Sarah's game of the week.
Yes. In the meantime, I had like a bit of an epiphany last week about skepticism. And
oh, yeah.
I should write about this, actually, I say.
Actually, you probably should. But you
I
can,
should.
You
I
can
am.
Discuss
I'm writing
it on the
about
show.
It as well.
All right, good.
I can show you. I actually have paragraphs. But like,
paragraphs always needed for a good piece of writing,
exactly.
I feel. If you don't have paragraphs, it's either a giant slab of text, which is a no-no,
or
unless
poetry.
You're a crazy person
poetry.
On the internet. I guess so. But poetry has stanzas, doesn't it?
I was thinking more or less of haiku type of... But then that's not really the paragraph.
That's still a stanza. Like,
it's a stanza,
our Japanese
view. but the difference between philosophical scepticism and scientific scepticism. And we are very much scientific sceptics on this show.
Are we not philosophical sceptics, though? Or are you just being presumptuous about our metaphysics here?
Maybe we are philosophical
So what
skeptics.
Is the difference?
Okay, so feel free to shoot me down if I miss something really important.
Oh, don't
guys.
Worry, the audience would.
Oh, they would. I know you guys would. Kudos. But to my understanding, scientific scepticism is talking about things that can be proved during using the scientific method and only believing things that have been proven through, obviously, repetition and being able with reproducible results, which is, you know, what we all think scepticism is. Philosophical scepticism is a little bit more sort of along the Matrix line, where it's like, can we even trust our own senses? We should be skeptic of our own senses. We should be skeptic of our ability to perceive the world around us. What if we're all in the Matrix?
Essentially, yeah. It's one of the first things you learn in a philosophy course, because I did one philosophy subject at university. Actually, I did two, but philosophy of biology kind of doesn't count.
Yeah.
It's more history of biology. But like, I did one first-year philosophy subject, and the first thing was like, are you in the Matrix? Can you actually believe anything and know that it's true? Or could everything that you think you're experiencing be something else? So it's a classic question. Mm.
And I say that you are probably not philosophical skeptics here because they're kind of almost mutually exclusive.
In a way,
scientific skepticism and philosophical skepticism. But that's for a later date, guys.
I guess, you could write about it. Yeah, and if you write about it for the Young Australian Skeptics, then...
we'll get more commentary on it.
Yeah, we'll link to it in the show notes, I guess, once that's done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in between your video games, you can pen a paragraph or two.
I have.
Oh, I saw a cool talk at the University of Melbourne the other day on the Higgs boson.
Oh.
And, like, I kind of knew some of the stuff because I've been following just the Higgs boson Large Hadron Collider stuff for a number of years because that's really fascinating.
It's kind of the darling of the
scientists, isn't it? And the University of Melbourne's had a lot to do with that. They processed a lot of the data. Their particle physicists did a lot of stuff there. And the announcement was joint sort of broadcast from CERN and the University of Melbourne at the same time.
Wow.
So it was like this teleconference thing. That was cool. That was last year. But there was this talk, and it was by a guy from Duke University. And it was actually really fascinating. I knew some of the stuff, as I said, because I'd followed it before. But I didn't know that the protons that they accelerate at the LHC are, I think, 99.99999% the speed of light, which doesn't... that's kind of a hard thing to put in context. But the guy who was speaking put it in context really well, where the speed of light is some like crazy amount. It's like, what, 300,000 kilometers per second, approximately?
3 by 10 to the 8 meters per second.
Yeah, yeah. The protons in the LHC are being accelerated to that speed minus 10 kilometers an hour.
Wow.
Which is about the pace of a brisk walk or a slow bike ride. So that's how fast they're going. They can't actually reach the speed that's 10 kilometres higher than that.
So if the protons were putting a little bit more effort, they could be reaching. speed of light.
But if they put in an infinite amount more effort, then they'd reach the speed of light.
True.
Because E equals MC squared. Yeah. So it's like exponentially more effort as you approach it. So to get even like a couple of kilometers per hour closer, you would have to pump in a massive amount of energy, which would then turn into mass. So
that's
they get heavier.
That's true.
And it would make it harder and blah, blah, blah. So that's how that works.
I was trying to riff on the whole, like, brisk walk kind of thing. Getting them to run. But it's true. You
proton,
do need a lot more energy.
Proton CrossFit.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for. We want to break those protons down into the quarks and then build them back together, hopefully as stronger protons.
We can rebuild them.
Yeah. And they can get a good time in CrossFit. I don't know. CrossFit's the new thing, isn't it now?
Yeah, it is.
It's like the Olympics.
Pretty awesome.
Do you know anything about it, Liz?
I've heard of it. I don't know.
I don't know. Because you said you were doing exercise today, so
yeah,
I imagine you're an expert at exercise compared to me, anyway.
Parkour. That's completely different. I wasn't in the gym today.
You were moving your body.
Though. Yeah, moving my body. But
don't we all, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, so none of us are...
With our limbs and stuff.
None of us are CrossFit
muscles.
Experts, unfortunately.
So our Houston clip for today is something that that's been around for a bit, but we thought we'd share it with you guys, the wonderful Himalayan rock salt.
I've been tossing up whether or not the Houston clip should reflect topical events that have happened, and that it has happened sometimes. And it'd be nice if we could do that every week, but unfortunately, we're just not aware of current events enough to be able to find a YouTube video every week that does that. So we have to resort to some classics from the vault that is YouTube. So there's this, I think, some documentary about Himalayan rock salt, which is a thing. It does exist. It's rock salt from the Himalayas, I guess.
I think it's a promotional video, not a documentary.
I guess. What's the difference?
Well, that is a good question.
Promoxumentary or something.
I actually quite like Himalayan rock salt.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong
like
with it.
As like a fixture in the... It's really pretty.
Or
it's
a condiment. Are you supposed to eat
good?
It?
It does taste good.
I've licked Himalayan rock salt before.
It's salt.
Yeah, because the thing with salt, it's not just table salt. It's like other like magnesium and potassium and stuff as well.
Which does have different
flavours.
But it's not magic.
I hope not. No. Otherwise... What bad... I don't know. Would that be bad? I guess no. Magic would be cool if it existed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it would be kind of cool.
We're up on that. Like, everyone agrees that if magic did exist, that would be cool.
But would it be magic? But if it existed, would it be
would
science?
Would it not be science? Oh, good question. I don't know.
Is science actually magic? Yes.
Yeah. That's where that was going.
So take a look at that, guys. It's a little bit of fun.
Before we go to our news items for the day, Liz... What do you do? Why are you here?
We're so smooth.
I know.
That was smooth as hell.
As a baby's bum.
What do you do, Elizabeth? Tell us a little bit about yourself. For those of us who missed last episode.
Well, yeah, you were in the interview in the context of Skeptic School. People who may not have listened to that episode, they might want a bit of context. Yes. What is that context? What is the Skeptic School? How did you get involved in skepticism?
All right, fantastic. So there was a man called Adam Van Langenberg who was a teacher at Mickin Secondary College, and I attended this said college, and he set up a Skeptics Club, I suppose you can call it. One of those, you know, sort of lunchtime book club sort of things, except not with books. I had gotten into The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe beforehand, and we sort of, me and Mr. V, we bonded over that, and I started coming to meetings after about a year, I think, the club was running, even though I'd known about it, because I had, I don't know, sport at lunch.
You're too
or
cool
whatever.
For it. You're part of the
oh,
jocks.
Yeah.
Those skeptic nerds.
Just dissing that. Skeptics.
That's how high school works, right? Like, they're still the cliques.
They're still the cliques.
Did you not attend high school?
I did. I attended it with you.
Yeah,
but high school was strange and weird, and nobody acted how they should, right? Is that right? Yeah, yeah.
To a certain extent. So I became known to a lot of the skeptical community after I attended the Melbourne Skeptical Convention about a year ago. It was actually.
It was a year. Yeah, just over a year.
Year and 11 days, I think.
Not that you've been counting.
No, I was just looking at the date because it was ended on the 2nd or the 1st or something. I don't remember. That was a good time. After that, I did a couple of speeches and got a lot of attention for being the young one around. I mean, you get a lot of attention.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
When you're 15 and 16 and you're surrounded by people who are...
in their 60s.
Yeah, remarkably older than that, you get quite a lot of attention. So I like that because I am a bit of an attention whore and here I am, I suppose.
Well, I saw you last at the Vic Skeptics giving a talk about demographics and stuff. In the back of an Italian cafe, an Italian restaurant. That was good.
Oh, that was fun.
No, it was a good, really good talk, yeah. And I actually recorded it, and then I lost the recording. So I recorded it just because I wanted to listen to it again. It's not weird or anything. It's just it was an interesting talk. What have you experienced in the skeptical community otherwise, other than being just like, you know, an instant celebrity because you're so young?
I am the token young person, I suppose. That's all.
Well, why do you think that is? What, do you? Because obviously there are younger people that are involved in skepticism. Are you the token young person, or is it just that people are like, oh, a young person, we don't see them at meetings, so you are a representative of the high schoolers?
Oh, it could be. It could be. Oh, because there are a lot of people my age that... in the Skeptic Society, have a lot of awesome people in there. But I suppose no one's experienced the bigger skeptical community. Like, I've gotten involved. I've gone to skeptic camps. I've gone to Skeptics Cafe. I've gone to the convention. So I've reached out to the skeptical community as opposed to the others who are still hanging out in the classroom listening to Mr. V talk, really. So, yeah, I think that's the difference between me and them. I don't know.
Don't want to draw too much of a distinction between you and them. Like, I am the special one. They are not enlightened enough to attend the special gatherings.
No, of course not.
They don't even have the robes yet.
I should bring them along sometime. They might enjoy it.
All of them.
All of them. Like, I don't think...
You should make it a school excursion. A school excursion to... a skeptics in the pub or something like. Oh wait, no,
in
hang
the pub?
On. No, skeptics
probably.
In... No, what do they do? Like,
you're just trying not to be condescending, are you? Skeptics in the playground. That's what they should do.
Skeptics in that
skeptics
Italian
on
restaurant.
The oval. Yeah, yeah. No,
you
yeah,
could
they
totally
can. They
do
can come
that.
To
skeptics
the
on the oval. Anyway.
Yes, that's really cool. That, yeah, and we're happy to have you on board here because we need some younger people.
Yeah, it'd be great to get you involved in doing some stuff.
Already a writer for the Young Australian Skeptic, yeah. So you've been doing that for a while. It's been good to have you around.
Now for our news items for the day.
Yeah, well, I've got a news item about microbes.
Let me guess.
Yeah.
Is it about archaea?
Maybe. You know what it is. You're not guessing just from nothing.
I guess
you're just
from
trying
nothing.
To make a comedy bit out of my predictability. No, the thing I talked about last week was genetics and evolution and bacteria. So now I'm talking about genetics, evolution, and bacteria. No, it's a thing about archaea and bacteria and eukaryotes. So essentially, it's looking at the major divisions in the tree of life. So the deepest parts where it splits off. What is the arrangement there? So there's some interesting things that are contradictory there. So I might talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, what are you...
Well, I'm
going
to be talking about something that's probably going to be close to Elizabeth's heart, actually.
Is it a ribcage?
To all of our own. It's the mediastinum, yes. No.
Ooh, medical jokes. Everyone got that one.
Yes. No, it's talking about a study that was recently done jointly by MIT and Harvard that was looking at comparison between test results and improving test results and whether that actually means that you're getting more intelligent or not.
Which is probably fresh in the mind of people who have just taken exams.
Yeah,
because it's like,
you know, exams. Let's go.
It's like I'm a pretty, you know, intelligent person.
I got good at my exam,
and my exam results were horrible. Said some people, not me, because I'm
said
the
me.
Best person ever.
All the time. All the time.
No, but there's often a distinction between, you know, how people think they actually are good at a subject and how well they do at exams because exams are stupid.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll
discuss
that.
Anyway, a very interesting study that was done by that.
And that's the only all the news we have with this episode because Belinda didn't have time to find something. Shame on you. But we've talked to Liz. It's fine.
Did you really have to mention
that? No actual shame. No actual shame.
Why did you even mention that?
So do you know,
I'm
we've talked about this before, but some people think that I'm actually mean. I'm not trying to be mean.
Sure you aren't, Jack.
I was a bit taken aback there.
Maybe I'm just hard to read. I need to become more legible.
Just quit while you're ahead, Jack. Just quit
was
now.
Was I ever ahead?
Belinda, you get to choose who's
yeah,
who,
actually,
who
no,
goes first.
At some point you were just a complete... So, I don't know if I should explain that joke, but the first orifice to form for the fetus is the anus. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So at one point you were a complete asshole.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, at some point everyone
before you
was.
Were ahead. So at some point you were. Yeah. So you
everybody
were,
was just an asshole.
You were never just ahead, but you've always been.
Well,
I'm sorry. I've yep.
Good job,
Jack,
though.
You can go first now.
Science burn.
And give it to Jack after all that.
Yeah, you know, going through all that just to talk about my stupid little news story that is predictable. Because, yeah, I love talking about this sort of stuff. And obviously it's been on my mind because the thing that I do for my research is evolutionary stuff. So I like thinking about trees. Juggernauts last week was alignment, which went into phylogenetic reconstruction, which I didn't actually talk about properly, which was stupid of me. But now I talk about talking more about evolutionary trees because you can't get enough of that. So some basic groundwork concepts that you need to understand here is that the deepest parts of the tree of life are what are called the domains. So you've mm-hmm. probably heard of bacteria before, you know, the single-celled organisms that, you know, live to make your life misery, but actually support all life on Earth. So don't get mad at them. Only get mad at the ones that want to make you sick. There's also another group that I've probably talked about on the show before that are called the archaea. They kind of look like bacteria. And if you didn't really know what you were looking at, you probably think they were bacteria. They're single-celled, but they tend to live in extreme environments and they have some weird cellular and biochemical differences. So they're actually quite separate. And then there's us, essentially, which is the eukaryotes. So archaea and bacteria are commonly grouped together as prokaryotes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're eukaryotes, so animals, plants, fungi, algae, protists, and
all of
things
the
like that.
Higher order.
Quote unquote. They're quote more unquote. Complex, but not really. That's just something we say because we're bigoted towards ourselves. So the classic conception of the tree of life is that there's these three domains: bacteria, archaea, and eukarya,
mm-hmm.
Or eukaryotes. And we are more closely related to archaea than we are to bacteria. But we're distinct from archaea.
Yes.
And that's the classical conception of the tree of life, that's sort of how it splits into three. But there's been some recent phylogenetic studies, so looking at molecular sequences of DNA and proteins and trying to do the stuff that I talked about last week with realignment
and
reconstruction,
yeah.
Trying to work out which organisms are more closely related to each other based on the similarities in these sequences. And there's actually quite a lot of debate between whether or not the model that I just talked about, the three-domain hypothesis, is correct, or another one, which I'm going to call the two-domain hypothesis, but it also has another name that would be confusing to explain, so I'm just going to call it the two-domain hypothesis. And that hypothesis is that archaea are actually what's called, and this is a technical term, I apologize in advance, it's paraphyletic. So essentially that just means that eukaryotes are actually just another type of archaea. We're
Whoa.
Not different from archaea, we're another type of archaea. So essentially there's only two domains, there's bacteria and archaea.
Mm.
We don't group outside that tree, we're clustered in with the other ones.
So we are archaea.
Yeah. So if you know anything about how eukaryotic cells formed, and this is quite a revolutionary hypothesis back in the 70s, was that essentially an archaea swallowed some bacteria.
Yeah, and
which
they became organelles.
Yeah, became our mitochondria, and mm-hmm. with plants as well, it became their chloroplasts. So mitochondria are the little, they're essentially bacteria inside our cells. You have bacteria inside your cells right now, except they've been there for billions of years,
and
they
symbiotic.
Produce all your energy. Plants have that as well. They have the green chloroplasts that allow them to photosynthesize, and that happens separately, obviously, otherwise we'd photosynthesize and we'd probably wouldn't have to eat as much food, which would be pretty cool.
It'd be pretty awesome. Sometimes I wish I photosynthesized.
The problem though, I've thought about this though, if us as people, I guess, and animals as well could photosynthesize, we wouldn't be able to get all our energy from the sun because our surface area to volume ratio is too low.
Well, yeah,
we don't have enough skin,
helps.
Essentially.
It helps.
It would, but it probably would only give you like 5% of your energy.
What if we were to
needs.
Be all to be covered with like all covered with hair
or leaves or something?
That is actually like
become tree people.
Yeah,
I guess that could help. I guess if we didn't walk around as much and we sort of
True.
Sat down and slept all day, if. I guess you could make koalas photosynthetic and they'd be okay.
Yeah.
I think probably. Or sloths.
Mm-hmm.
Just cute green sloths. Sloths actually sometimes are green because moss grows on them. But that's another story. So getting back to... How do we get to this? Getting back to the two-domain versus three-domain hypothesis. It's really fascinating that we always knew that we were at some point some sort of pre-Archaea, but now it seems like we may actually be another type of Archaea. And the thing, a thing I want to highlight here is that it's still ongoing and that we don't know, and there's actually a lot of interesting and complex assumptions that scientists and evolutionary biologists that are working on this problem have to deal with. So it's sort of like the interface of statistics, computer science, molecular biology. They have all this stuff to deal with, and it's really unclear. So this is another example of uncertainty in science where scientists are actually happy to say we don't know 100% of the facts here. But I just find it fascinating that potentially we're looking at archaea as these weird things that that sort of
live in sulfur vents.
Live in sulfur vents, or live in Antarctica in sub-freezing water, or, you know, live in acid mines. But they're actually like our cousins. I guess we're related to all organisms eventually, as deep as you go. But, you know, we can sort of call them, they're part of our family tree.
There
we should probably
great,
treat
great,
them a
great,
bit better.
Great.
You're going to be saying great a lot.
Yeah, I will.
Probably for the entire episode, because it's a long time ago. It was about, you know, probably
you could actually calculate how long it would take you to say all of those.
We could.
So yeah, yeah. But let's not.
Okay.
Because it would probably take the entire show, because I'm terrible at maths. Interestingly, there hasn't been any examples of archaea that are that cause illness in humans. So maybe they're just they're
looking out for us.
They're looking out for us because they're part of our family.
They're
and they know how
relatives.
Closely related we are to them. I must say, though, that this relationship is billions of years ago. It's not as if we crawled out, like insects came from, like, you know, single-celled organisms like 500 million years ago or something. This is still in the distant past, and why it's still a bit murky. But yeah, so that's something to think about.
Well, this is still a hypothesis, right?
Yeah, so it's not completely resolved. So the thing is, the reason I'm mentioning
is still, this... So if you, you know, when you write out the full name of humans,
well,
we're still eukaryotes, aren't we?
We're still eukaryotes, but we might be eukaryotes, and then deeper, we might be archaea.
So it'd be archaea and then eukarya.
Maybe.
So eukarya will become a subsection of archaea.
And the reason I'm mentioning this is that some of the more recent papers that have, quote-unquote, better methods have shown this model to be more likely over the other one. But you never know. Maybe in 5 years we'll have a definitive answer.
Or not, because it's science.
Yay, yeah, well,
science.
Hopefully we'll progress to some point of relative certainty.
Yeah.
It won't be 100%. Mm. Yeah. Liz, what do you think about being related to extremophiles that live near volcanoes? Are you for or against this development?
I can't be for or against science. That's just ridiculous.
Exactly. That's the right. That was a trick question. You've passed.
I don't know, I'm sure I have, like, cousins that like being in sulfur, excreting volcanoes under the ocean.
Don't be that mean to your, to your siblings.
That rotten egg smell.
Yeah.
That'll explain a lot that goes in my on in my house, though.
Well, Liz passed that test, but should she... am I segueing towards your thing? Yes, I am segueing towards your thing.
Well, Liz passed that test. Will she pass the next one?
Here
will she
go.
Pass the test of life?
Yeah. So...
Isn't that just living? Does living
have
to
pass? Passing on your genetic material to the next generation.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Yep, reproduction, that's only what life is about.
Yep.
Have as many kids as you can.
Don't eat them.
No cannibalism, please.
It's a common mistake some animals make, I guess. Yeah. Eat their young.
I could talk about that, by the way. Someone in my lab gave a presentation on larval cannibalism.
Sorry.
But let's not get into
that.
I
thought you were going to say someone in my lab ate their baby.
No, that didn't happen, Sarah. Funnily enough.
Oh, dear. So, my news. So, I have a story here that was actually a publication from MIT. And they also had some contribution from the NIH and to the National Institute of Health in America and Harvard University that was basically looking at test results, abstract reasoning, and sort of student performance. What they've come up with is basically... improving your test score by studying or by attending a good school doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to be any better at abstract reasoning, or therefore increase your fluid intelligence.
Okay.
So it's a very difficult study to do. So what they've done is they've basically defined two ways of measuring intelligence, and this is an accepted way of doing it. I had a quick look at it, and it takes sort of crystallized intelligence. Which is sort of a psychological term for measurable intelligence. I like the word crystallized in there.
And so much jargon.
And then there's those with fluid intelligence, and that's the ability to analyze abstract problems that aren't sort of rote patterns that you've learned, as opposed to sort of applying those patterns to new abstract issues. So you can think of them as kind of being like abstract thinking or like fluid intelligence versus sort of recalled intelligence.
Mm.
And so basically what they found is they had a look at different schools, so higher performing schools and lower performing schools. And they found that by taking a random sample and looking at which students attend which schools and which students attend sort of lower performing schools, they found that students attending high performing schools do get better MCAS scores. So that's the Massachusetts Comprehensive Assessment System scores on average. But they don't, their fluid intelligence scores don't actually correspond to their assessment scores.
Okay, so interesting.
Even sort of people who might have lower fluid intelligence who attend a high-performing school did show an increase in their crystallized intelligence or their MCAS scores over people who had then from the same primary school attended lower-performing schools. So they did get a bit greater increase in their performance, but that didn't correspond to an increase, that didn't show a corresponding increase in fluid reasoning or abstract reasoning in those children.
That's really fascinating, because one of the things, I guess high school students forever have been talking about this, and uni students as well, they'll have to go on about how exams don't really test your knowledge as such, or how well you understand the material. It's more about how much you can cram into your brain about the specific facts that you were taught.
So I guess you could say that they do test knowledge, but they don't test your intelligence or your reasoning.
I guess so, yeah. It's hard to, I think it's a little hard to separate out intelligence from your ability to understand the concepts. Because a lot of science, I guess this is where I'm coming from, because I've been studying science at university for the past 4 years. A lot of science is that rote knowledge. So it's what chemical is this? Name this chemical. Draw this chemical. What process is this? Blah, blah, blah. But the conceptual understanding of how does this... Okay, I'm going to talk about biology.
How do the characteristics of this chemical then influence how it would interact with
a
hypothetical other?
Yeah, it's like, or how would you synthesize this chemical? What are the different approaches you could have?
Exactly.
How would you, why would one be more economical or less economical, blah, blah, blah. So it's putting it into a larger context. Some people are a lot better at that than... Or they get less frustrated learning that stuff because it's actually interesting, rather than just cramming in knowledge that... may or may not be assessed, that they may or may not instantly forget the fact after they come out the exam. I had some ideas about science education and stuff before that is actually ties into this a lot, this quite a bit, where we teach science in high school, and I guess, Liz, you can talk about this because you are in high school at the moment, so you're probably more qualified to talk about how high school science is taught because you've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But high school science tends to be, and I guess undergrad uni science tends to be, memorize these facts and then regurgitate it. And that puts a lot of students off, where it should be more about how does science work? How do people do science? How is science useful? And what are the concepts that the basic concepts you need to understand, rather than just blasting you with facts and stuff.
That's sort of interesting, because having done physics, physics is very much not, you can't really memorize anything. You don't have to memorize any formulas.
Yeah, the constants.
It's learning how to solve the problem that you're faced with.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people would say that, if they're doing physics in high school, that they have to memorize all these things. So the disparity between physics at university and physics at high school
seems
to be quite large.
It is a big disparity.
Have you done physics this year?
Yeah, there's a lot of difference between... Oh, now that I'm going to be doing Unit 1 chemistry and Unit 1 physics next year. I did Unit 1 bio last year. So bio in high school, it's pretty much just facts. You pretty much forget everything after the exam. Because it's so out of context, the way biology is taught in high school. It's sure, I can talk about the mitochondria, but if you're not going to link it to anything else. What is the, there's no context to it at all. Physics, from what I've seen, I've looked at the course. It's a lot better. Like, there's a lot of it's a lot more problem solving. And looking at the exam, the worst questions were, or the ones that most people didn't get, were the ones where you had to sort of use your pre-existing knowledge to figure something out. Like, we had a question about the scientific method, actually. I got this one right, thankfully.
Oh, you hope so.
Yeah. God, after all the work I've done. You had seeds and they were baked at different temperatures and you had to reason which ones had thicker shells or skins, I suppose. Awesome. Which was pretty self-explanatory. Like, the ones that germinated for a higher percentage but were baked at a higher temperature, they probably had thicker skins. So that was pretty easy to reason, but it was a really badly answered question for a lot of people. So it's that sort of thing. There's not that much thinking in the biology courses. I haven't done that much. I haven't seen that much chemistry or physics at a VCE level yet, but I think they're a tad bit better than bio.
From what I remember of year 12 chemistry, which is sort of the highest level chemistry in high school in Australia, or Victoria, I guess, a lot of the stuff was sort of, you've got analytical methods, so how do you determine how chemistry, you know, is done in practice? Mm-hmm. And it was all linking them together, and people got really annoyed because it's like, you have to do gravimetric analysis on silver nitrate or something, and then you
then
have to,
using the results from that,
you
then
use that, and then you do NMR, and then you blah, blah, blah. So I think that was actually quite a good question, and that sort of stuff. But more of the, you know, in biochemistry, like, memorize glycolysis. Which enzyme converts this molecule into this molecule? Draw the molecules. Blah, blah, blah. A lot of biochemistry is like that. It's just, I don't want
anyway,
to learn this.
So just to kind of draw this story to a close, what they found is that while sort of standard, like, tutoring and standard, like, just normal school teaching will increase your MCAS scores. And in this case, they mostly looked at math, so they did look a bit of science, but mostly math scores. That does increase your crystallized abilities, but, like, then there are other things, and there have been, like, other studies that have looked at sort of trying to increase your fluid intelligence or your abstract reasoning, like things like, you know, memory and attention exercises and things like that. So, like, there's this study, although it's still in preliminary stages, they'll be following the students up till year 10. So how many more years is that? It's a number more years for them to follow through with. But it's kind of brings up a question of, like, what is school doing if that's the case? Like, is school meant to be teaching you fluid intelligence or sort of abstract reasoning or the ability or processing?
Well, can you teach fluid intelligence?
Well, yeah, like, they've
Or is
had,
that a,
like,
an intrinsic concept of, like, who you are?
It's something that you do gain. I think, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure there are ways to promote it.
Yeah, like, they said, like, memory exercises and intention and things like that.
Like, it's brain training. And,
yeah, training.
Know, plasticity.
Learning techniques of how to...
How to conceptualize things, I suppose.
Yeah, and they're really useful skills, and it kind of ties into skepticism, I guess. That's more reasoning skills, but they are transferable, I think. Trying to work out, like, how you're thinking about something, could my thinking be flawed? Why do other people think the way they do, and why do they disagree with me? How can I get them to agree with me for good reasons rather than, you know, pressing a knife to their throat and forcing them to talk about how homeopathy doesn't work or something like that? I don't recommend that.
That's
that
always
pathway.
My method, the knife to the throat. It's effective, to say the least.
And slightly illegal.
So it never got in
only
the way.
Slightly.
Well, I mean, if the knife never touches them and they don't remember that they were attacked.
I mean, Jack, what are laws, really?
Exactly, just human conceptions put together by society. That's Jack's Anarchist Corner for the week. We need music for all of these segments.
Yeah.
Did we bring the ukulele today?
Oh, no, I should have done that. But Tom's not here, so Tom didn't have his political rant of the week.
True.
Tom has a cold, by the way, that's why he's not here. And I have a cold as well, which is why I might sound a bit stuffy.
Yeah, everyone's kind of getting a bit of a block nose today.
Which is strange, it's summer, why is everyone getting a cold?
Anyway.
Because, you know, season doesn't actually have much to do with that. But it's just interesting. I could say that Melbourne weather is cold in summer, which it is, but I don't know if that's related. Anyway, intelligence stuff.
Yeah, so educational policy. should we be teaching kids to remember facts, or should we be teaching them to do other things, or should we be doing both?
Exactly. Maybe we should get on. Maybe we should get on an educator at some point.
That'd be great.
Yeah, like someone. I know a couple of people. Unfortunately, they're in Brisbane and stuff. But maybe I can find someone in Melbourne. If you're an educator and you know me and you're listening to the podcast and you're yelling at your iPod and your iPhone right now because I'm not remembering who you
are.
Sorry. I apologize because I'm an asshole. But we already established that.
I thought we were going to edit that bit out.
No, we would never edit that bit out. But yeah, that would be something to look at in the future, I think, because education is a big topic. And now that we have like a properly young person who's going through, you know, high school.
A properly young person.
Properly young.
I mean, inexperienced and young. That's.
I never said that. They are not my words. And if you repeat that, I will sue you for defamation.
Speaking of things that need to have a theme tune, Juggernauts!
Do we need a theme tune for
this? I think we totally should.
Can we make a theme for Juggernauts?
We used to have theme music for our segments a long time ago, and we stopped doing that because we thought it was a bit tacky. I don't know. Because, you know, theme music can make or break a segment.
What
we like to do in this podcast is maintain the illusion that we are continuously talking for a certain period of time and we're not constantly cutting in and out and cutting bits out, which we're not really doing. We do it sometimes when Belinda completely makes a fool of me.
It's okay, Jack. You do that all by yourself.
Oh,
it's all good.
Oh, on fire. But I don't know if we should have theme music. If someone wants to write us theme music, and it's good, then we might put it in.
I mean, maybe not even theme, just like a little jingle. Just a jingle.
Just someone yelling Juggernauts.
Why would we do that when we could just do it ourselves every episode?
Yeah, just
in an organic fashion.
Just someone screaming it.
Juggernauts.
That was a perfect example of a scream. But yeah, maybe we should actually talk about what the Juggernauts word is.
The word for this week is abiogenesis.
You chose this one because you thought that we maybe had talked about it before, and then I said no, we hadn't.
Yeah.
Have we actually? I don't think we have. If we have, I've made a terrible mistake.
Oops.
But I don't know if everybody's listened
it's
to every
cool
episode.
Word.
It is a cool word. And listening and looking at it and sort of hearing it, it makes you think of like A is like the negative, like it's a,
which is the case.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Because it's without
it's not,
life.
It's not
abio.
It's not biogenesis.
Not true.
Etymology,
right?
101. Yeah. Abiogenesis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is it A? So I don't get this.
So
why
you came up with a word, but you don't know what it is?
No, not entirely.
Okay.
Which is why
good
I came
work
up with it, because I don't know what it is.
Good.
And it's a cool word.
All right.
Good enough reason as any, I guess. So abiogenesis is essentially the process by which life appeared on Earth from material that wasn't alive. So abiogenesis, if you break down the word, abio, not life. Start, Genesis, start, you know.
The start of not life, but doesn't
start biogenesis? Of life from not life. So,
okay, there we go.
Abiogenesis contrasts with biogenesis.
So, is biogenesis the generation of life from life?
So, essentially, biogenesis is reproduction, you know. Bacteria come about from dividing bacteria. Small people, otherwise known as children, come about from adults, and so on and so forth with plants and fungi and stuff like that as well. I mean, they don't come from adults. They come from, you know, the adults of the mushrooms and things. But abiogenesis, it's essentially that it's the theory of how life arose on this planet. Contrasting with, of course, like, you know, religious creationism, but also panspermia, which
true
is it's a great word, which is the idea that life came from another planet, like
damn
Mars,
it, we
I
totally
guess, or
should have done that
outside
one
the solar
that's
system.
That word
panspermia is great.
We can still talk about it, though. But like,
well, they compare and contrast. You know, they're both secular ideas or scientific ideas about how life appeared on the planet.
Appeared on the planet, not necessarily created.
But then panspermia could still involve abiogenesis just in another location. So,
or
you
it
know,
could still involve sort of some religious idea. Like, isn't that what Scientology is meant to be all about? Like,
I guess so.
Like, we were colonized by aliens or something?
Yeah, I don't think they came in on a comet. I think it was in a 747 or something. It was some plane.
Okay.
I don't know. They dropped
what?
Souls into volcanoes and blew them up with atom bombs or something. Maybe I'm getting my Scientology confused with something
if
crazy.
If there are any Scientology listeners, please shoot us a line and let us know.
Please
what
do
we're
not
getting
get in
wrong
touch, because I'll be creeped out with the fact that you might murder us. I don't know. I've heard things about Scientology.
But to be honest, it's perfectly acceptable to mix up Scientology with anything crazy because, let's be honest, that...
Oh, is there a line there? Probably not. Okay.
Just because you believe in crazy talk doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad person. Any Scientologists who are listening, just a disclaimer there.
I would be extremely surprised if they were listening. But if they are, you know, don't look up my address.
We do have that bunch of listeners in, like... Where are they from?
I don't know.
Like, didn't we have like a whole bunch of listeners in somewhere in rural China?
Oh, that was the thing. That was ages ago, but we got a massive spike in downloads from rural China for no apparent reason.
Maybe there is a shed of Scientologists in rural China.
I guess so. It'd be perfect place to hide out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
we know their dirty secret now. They like to listen to skeptics.
We assume we know, based on no evidence at all. So yeah, Abiogenesis. That's our Jargonauts. It's a cool
and
thing.
And the other one was pan...
Panspermia.
Panspermia, so everything sperm.
That's what that means?
Yes.
Or it means sperm in a pan.
Oh, no.
So either way.
No.
That was brilliant.
Everything sperm.
And by sperm, we mean like life being...
Seeded here.
Seeded here?
And
is that
not semen, no.
Okay.
Yeah. So
no semen in a pan. Oh,
you know there's a cookbook out there just for you.
I know. I've read it.
I've read it. Cool.
Oh no.
On the internet.
On the internet. Good. Good. Not
I didn't actually it was an e-book. It was an e-book version.
Good.
Can you buy it in hard copy?
Yes, you can.
Wow.
So to speak. Okay. Okay, moving on.
Now to pick this show up out of the gutter. Our question of the week, is it ethical to teach children about the existence of something that doesn't exist?
Like Santa? Yeah, so basically...
So that's what we did. Yeah. So we are coming up to Christmas. We said this last week.
I saw Santa in...
Was she... She?
She?
Could be a she. I don't know. Was Santa kissing your mother? That's how the story goes, right?
What?
Saw mummy kissing Santa Claus?
I thought that rhyme was implying that Santa was the dad.
Yeah.
And not like the Santa.
Oh my God.
And not the Santa.
Completely blew my mind. No, there's multiple ways to read that that classic piece of American mythology.
You obviously interpreted it as being Santa
historians,
the housebreaker.
Historians are split into two camps. One is that Santa sort of does exist in that thing, and he is sort of cheating on Mrs. Claus, I guess, but also the wife is cheating on the husband. We assume there's a husband. It might be a single mother. We never know. They may have been divorced. The father may have died in a war. We don't know. The other interpretation is that Santa is the father.
Yeah, just dressed up.
But sometimes that can do bad things to children that do believe that Santa is real, and that's kind of what we're talking about here.
But anyway, I saw Santa at the shopping centre the other day, and he was
jolly.
He was real.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
He was also probably one of many Santas.
Yeah.
So you're saying you believe in Santa, but it's just not the Santa.
It's that Santa.
Says.
That Santa is real.
Well, I actually saw two Santas that day.
Aren't we all Santa deep down inside?
I went to one shopping centre and then I went to another one because I lived near two.
You can teleport.
And they were clearly different people.
Completely different skin colour.
I need to talk about this.
Different gender.
Yeah.
So the question that we asked last week, obviously it's coming up on Christmas, is it ethical to teach your kids that Santa does exist when it doesn't? So what are your thoughts on this, guys, before we get to some thoughts of our listeners? So Liz, you are way too old to even probably remember. You don't remember
Elizabeth,
it as much as
Elizabeth,
I do.
But you do know the truth about Santa, right? What's the truth? What are you going to tell me, Sarah? That's just awkward.
Awkward
Let's
silence.
Just say that your parents get a bit poorer around Christmas time.
And Santa just misses your house or something.
Those biscuits don't go to Santa.
Yeah. And that's why your father is obese. that's why we started putting out carrots.
Yes.
And skim milk.
I remember that, doing that. I put out celery sticks.
Yeah. They were like, Santa gets way too many biscuits.
Yeah.
We'll just give the reindeer the carrots and that'll be it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you probably don't remember it as, like, you probably remember it as well as we do, which is probably not very well at all. But do you remember remembering that, like finding out that Santa wasn't real?
Oh yeah, no, I figured it out after, I think in grade 3 or 2 or something. So I was not that young, well, youngish.
No, that's
pretty average age, I think.
Yeah. Appropriate age, yeah. Throughout the year, I thought that Santa existed, and then I sort of had an epiphany and realized, oh, Mom, it's you, isn't it? And she wouldn't admit it. Like for years and years, she kept putting Santa on the little label, the Christmas label present things. She still plays that game with us. She still puts the little Santa labels on them.
Maybe she believes it. She's lying to herself. Oh, yes, Santa's coming. I'm just going
to... Lying to herself, lying to her wallet.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, Mum.
So you guys, Blinda, Sarah, you don't remember?
I do. I remember being in the car with my father. And, like, I'd already had my suspicions because...
Yeah, everyone's
suspicious.
It was
either my mum and dad both had very distinctive handwriting.
Oh, so you're taking the forensic approach.
I could tell that it was their handwriting. And so I was in the car and I'm like, I think I was in grade 2, about 8 years old, and I was like, please just tell me, like, is Santa real?
Wow, confrontation.
Yeah, and then my dad's response, the idea of Santa is real.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Oh, the philosophical
nice
approach.
Nice save there.
Yeah, so the festive cultural idea, yeah, the cultural meme of Santa is a real tangible. So it's worth playing along. Because it's part of the gap.
That's a very grown-up and appropriate way of saying it, I think.
Yeah, well, I think it also was sort of so that I wouldn't give the game away for some of the other kids that hadn't... also, like the younger kids that lived in my street that still Santa was a big thing for them. It was still if you don't behave, I'm going to call Santa, I'm going to phone the North Pole, and you're not going to get any
that
presents.
That was great.
Yeah.
No, so is it ethical to do so?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think in the terms of Santa, I think when you're a kid, you don't have the same... I mean, when you're a kid, you don't have the same ability to think things through completely rationally. And, I mean, apply skeptical reasoning, perhaps. Apply the scientific method to everything around you. So I think fantasy is a really important part of, like, a child's development, to be honest. So I think, like, Santa's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we obviously live in societies, like, there are obviously other societies in which Santa doesn't exist, but even in those, like, there are other ones. There are, like, you know, the New Year's demon or something.
Mm.
And it's more a tradition than anything. But, I mean, that said, I liked Belinda's parents' approach, where it's kind of like, where it gets to sort of grade 2, you can kind of, instead of dropping the bomb, you can kind of leave hints and then let the kid come to their own conclusion using reasoning.
Mm. Oh, I just had an epiphany, actually. It's almost a rite of passage figuring out that Santa's not real. So that's like your first foray into questioning things.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That
would be a good thing.
That's what I was thinking. I thought that potentially by setting them up with this myth and then allowing them themselves to find out that it's not true, it makes them question authority figures from a very early age. Because who's more of an authority to kids than their parents?
Mm. That's true. Parents should lie to their children all the time.
Yeah, lie to them about their adoption status, about their... about your personal worth, about whether or not their grandparents love them. I don't know. No, don't do that. That's horrible. So our listeners, what they thought about this, Luke Freeman says he wouldn't do it, actually. He wouldn't he wouldn't teach his kids. He doesn't have kids, but he may in the future. He doesn't think he'll teach them about it, but he won't dispel it either. So he won't go out of his way to sort of go, Santa is not real, when they come home from prep or something and they've talked to all their fellow students. So he's just going to teach them critical thinking in a general way and hope that they come up with it themselves. And he doesn't like lying to kids anyway. So I guess the unethical thing is that you are lying to the kids, but it is a cultural thing. So
it's unethical, but it's an accepted practice.
Mm.
Yeah. The parent-child relationship is such an important one that you want to... Like, even though it is only Santa Claus, you're still lying to them. Yeah. You're still telling them something is real when it's not, if you're, like, actively sort of saying, oh, yes, Santa. But if you phrase it as more of a cultural game or a tradition... So I suppose being upfront that it's not a real
thing,
person, but sort of a cultural idea. I think
we're
it's
all
probably
Santa.
We are all Santa.
Yeah,
no,
we all have a Santa deep inside of us.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. A really fat like guy
and
dressed
that's
in red
why
and a beard.
The Western world has such a bad obesity problem at the
we're
moment.
All yeah. Santa.
We're all Santa. Claire says that she's definitely never lying to her potential future kids about Santa. It seems really mean and deceitful. She doesn't know why many adults do it, so that's another perspective where you just can't get past the fact that you're doing something mean
you know,
to a kid.
You know, I would have agreed with you until I had contact with small children.
And small children are so annoying that you're just like, I will tell you anything.
In a way, in a way,
to get you to shut up.
In a way, yes. But, like, also, they just it's so important to them. Like, I don't know, like...
Well, they want
to
believe in magic, like
exactly.
Disney and stuff and princesses.
And someone else is going to tell them about Santa.
And being imaginative is fine. Having an imagination.
Exactly.
Believe, like, making things up, having make-believe, that's, in fact, an important part of childhood.
Maybe we could actually produce like a subculture within the Santa culture where we just spice it up a bit, where maybe Santa isn't some magical person that lives in the North Pole. He's an ancient robot that was sent down from an alien race to serve humanity's needs around this trying time when we couldn't actually... So throughout, you know, the ancient, you know, thousands of years ago, before we had a society, during winter in the Northern Hemisphere, where sort of most of humanity lives, it was so tough for us at that point where we couldn't actually go out and hunt and find food. So the aliens sent this sort of caretaker robot that wasn't actually one person, it was multiple that could go all over the world. It seemed like it was one because
so
they were all the same.
You're telling...
But they gave us presents so that we could survive the harsh winter months.
Okay, that works, except then you have to think about what you're telling your children. Are they telling your children...
Telling
there
them
is
that
a nice
rad
old
alien
man,
robots
no,
exist.
There is a nice old man in a red suit with reindeer delivering presents, as opposed to there is a swarm of ancient robots that have been sent
that
here
that look like
from
Santa, that want to, that you know, that and that we're so grateful to the alien overlords that are overlooking our humble sort of early burgeoning society.
Okay.
That
so
we
this is
honor,
going with, this is going with the panspermia.
Robots.
This is going with the panspermia.
Oh,
we
could have evolved here. They just want to guide us to a more, you know,
licensed society.
Yeah. Licensed society.
I have no idea.
Through Santa.
I have no idea why, but that story reminded me of something that a friend told me when I was like in grade one or something, when I still believed in Santa. She told me that she put like, they had like a glass of wine or like a glass of beer or something next to the cookies every Christmas. And she told me that all Australians did it, and because I grew up in a Russian family, I was like, oh, okay, so all the other Australians do it. So I like forever thought after that, while I believed in Santa, that he just got really like drunk every single time he gave out presents, and that's why like sometimes kids didn't get the presents they wanted, because Santa's just was too drunk to figure out
the wrong presents.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is fantastic.
I want
I
to
like
incorporate
that
into
I think this is our thing to put out to all the parents who are listening to this show.
Yeah.
Be creative with your Santa bit. Don't go with the cultural tradition.
And allow...
Say that you have the real truth about Santa and that your family has harbored this secret for generations.
Yes.
Yep.
And that everyone else has a sort of a corruption of, of the
and
myth.
And then allow your children to pull down that myth. And,
yeah, find out the flaws
intrinsically
themselves.
Doubt you for the rest of their life.
It's like, if Santa really is an alien robot, then why don't we, you know, see robots like that around? Why haven't we found one? What if one breaks? Then we could, you know, where... Yeah, and then you sort of come up with things about the Men in Black and secret government agencies.
Then by then we'll probably have enough robots around for that
exactly,
to be probable.
Exactly, and then we can actually make it a reality. And that's why
Santa
I'm
robots.
In science, so I can make Santa robots real. Our question for next week doesn't exist. We don't actually have a question for next week. And the reason for that is that we're actually retiring Question of the Week for a little bit, because in the future, we are starting a new sort of podcast in the same sort of vein as Unfiltered Thoughts, which is the one I've been doing for a little while, whereby it'll still be part of the same feed, but it'll be all about Vox Pops and trying to get maybe your opinions. We might have... audio clips of things that you send in, listeners send in, or people on the street that we interview all around Australia. We'll be getting people from different universities to help out, answer questions. They'll be topical. They'll be classic questions. The sort of stuff that we've been asking on Question of the Week for ages. So that's why it's not going to be part of this main show anymore, but you will see it in the coming months as that comes out.
We now have a brief apology to give.
It's not really an apology.
It's not an apology. It is an amendment.
It's an apology that we haven't amended this thing. Sarah, it's to do with you, so I think
it is to do with me. I haven't actually read the thing that you linked me, Jack.
Oh, that's horrible.
But I do know what this is about, and I have done a bit of research before composing this apology, and I will put it together now. It has come to my attention that in episode 102, I did say some things about acupuncture, which, to be fair, is one of my favourite pseudoscientific ideas, which may have been unfounded.
Stabbing people with needles, that sounds great.
Okay, I can try and justify myself, but I won't. So we received a link to one of my favourite websites on the web, Science Based Medicine, which on the whole is actually a very reliable source, that published a article recently that was very critical of acupuncture. And I'll be fair, I did have a look at all the Cochrane reviews, and there is equivocal at best evidence of acupuncture working in the majority of medical conditions.
Yeah, so in episode 102 you said that acupuncture could potentially work for some things like fibromyalgia and
a couple of the pain syndromes that I've been exposed to where acupuncture is kind of thought of as, you know, if you want to do acupuncture, go ahead and do it, because the drugs that we have are, you know, they're helpful, but they're not helpful for everyone. And for some people in whom those drugs don't work, they go off and do acupuncture on themselves and find that it helps. Which
could be a placebo thing.
It's probably a placebo thing. So basically, acupuncture doesn't have any concrete evidence for it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have an effect above placebo.
So
the reason we're talking about this is that, and the reason it's an amendment, is that we actually got some comments on the show notes for this episode when we released it back whenever that was, about 2.5 months ago, and we forgot about those comments. So people got a bit angry that we forgot, and we just wanted to amend it now. So.
Yes, and I will endeavour from here on to include more evidence-based medicine in my medical news
items. It's not my fault. Everyone has stuff like that all the time. And I guess the evidence isn't completely there. I mean, the studies that have been done on acupuncture haven't all been amazing.
No, they've so basically, yeah, it's been
essentially what you can say is that there's no evidence that acupuncture works. I mean, there's always the potential that it could work, but
there's no scientific reason. Yeah. So I think, like, in terms of scientific evidence, there's little. There is some, like, evidence-based sort of statistical, like, instead of scientific medicine, as opposed to science-based medicine, evidence-based medicine.
Mm. Mm.
There is some evidence, but it's probably placebo. But there is no scientific basis for acupuncture whatsoever.
Well, that's all we have time for today. As always, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, and just generally on the interwebs.
You've got an email address if you want to get in contact.
It's on the page.
youngausskeptics@gmail.com, and also our website, youngausskeptics.com, Young Australian Skeptics site. If you want to help out the show, we're trying to get a donations page up and running if you want to donate to the show, so maybe hold up on that if you've got a massive amount of money that you just want to pump into the show.
Because
you love us that much. Hold off on that. We're trying to work that out. But in the meantime, if you'd like to get the book that we put together, which is the Skeptical Blog Anthology, then that would be probably a good present. I guess if you buy it now, it's probably not, you probably won't get it in time for Christmas, unfortunately. But if you
buy the ebook version, if you
want to give an ebook because you're a horrible person, go right ahead. But it's still a good book, whether it's ebook or not. And you can get that at lulu.com. And that helps support the show. You can also find us all on Twitter. Other than Sarah, you said you were getting a Twitter.
I am going to.
But I'm on Twitter as Jack L. Scanlon. Tom is Lang Around. Rachel is Rachel MK. Linda is Oztronomer. And Liz, do you have a Twitter account?
I do. I can't even remember what Oh, yeah. I put it as Wizzy Rye Cannon. So try spelling that.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes on the website. But try and Google that if you can.
As always, our intro and outro music is Glorious Feeling by Joelistics. Catch you guys next time.
Cool. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
That's right, I've listened to your voice.
In bed.
We had played...
In bed.
We didn't record that before the show, so that's out of nowhere. And that just sounds creepy, Sarah.
Okay.
That just sounds creepy. You thought you were riffing on a call and
I thought I was.
But no.